broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This is the broadcast for August the 12th in the year of our Lord, 2019. This is hour one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. And absolutely, we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. We reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. A quick recap. We have to recap Friday and Saturday. So busy on the radio. It's amazing. We talked about Google is adding audio podcasts to its search results alongside videos, photos, and web links. Soon you'll be able to go ahead and listen to podcasts directly from within Google, not even have to go to external sources. So that's good as long as Google doesn't manipulate freedom and filter and shut down conservative content as we've seen them do in the past. We talked about New York City businesses have to cut staff, raise prices due to $15 minimum wage. They just can't take it. They can't afford it. It's that simple. Government regulation running amok and violating the free enterprise system, folks. Sad but true. Mariah Carey, off her rocker, celebrates meeting Hillary Clinton. Well, President Hillary Clinton, very strange. I don't think Hillary became president. I think people are kind of unhinged and don't really realize that still, huh? Washington Post, Lucy Flores suffers backlash after accusing Joe Biden of inappropriate touching. Yeah, the Me Too movement certainly has favorites. Joe Biden, Bill Clinton, they're not touched at all in the Me Too movement, hardly. Sad but true. Joe Biden in Iowa, quote, we choose silence over, what? We choose science over fiction. We choose truth over facts. What the heck is Joe Biden talking about? Then he says, poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids are. And nobody really attacks him for being a racist. The sad part about it is I don't really want to take advantage of Joe because of his words. He makes a lot of mistakes. They really pounce on others when they make mistakes, but Joe they give a pass to. And I don't really think we should be taking advantage of people because of their words in the first place. So he made a mistake and didn't mean it. Let it go. But we should be willing to do that to both sides, and sadly, society's not willing to do that. Flash message, it starts when you log on. Stand against hate. From white supremacists to the radical religious right, they say right-wing extremism is on the rise. Pledge to stand against hate, and they attack Dave Dobenmeyer. This is right-wing watch talking about it, relating to he got tickets to Donald Trump's Ohio campaign rally, and right-wing watch is kind of going ballistic over that, saying David Dobenmeyer is just an evil white supremacist. As far as I understand, he's with Past the Salt Ministries and very Christian as far as I can see. You know, the problem is in society we take people's words out of context. We know people don't mean things, but we beat them up over it anyway. Look at how they're treating Joe Biden. I'm not a defender of Joe, but I'm not going to attack him because of a mistake in a statement or a, you know, I don't like it when they take advantage of somebody for something that they just, it's obvious that it wasn't intended. It's obvious that it came out wrong. We know full well. We don't give them a chance to clarify. We do eat them alive. Everybody in the media is going to make mistakes if you're in the media long enough. You just are. And I think taking advantage of somebody because of their words or manipulating what they say, knowing full well it came out wrong and that's not what they mean, is wrong. We need to give them just a chance to clarify and move on. But we've done this to politicians as long as I've been alive and longer. Tell Congress no student loan bailout. That's a biggie, folks. Hour two. We had our guest on, Mr. Richard Mack, former sheriff, freedomcoalition.com, CSPOA.org. And we talked about Dayton, Ohio. Police claim they were on the scene and neutralized the shooter in 32 seconds. The point is that if they can get the shooter that quick, but nine people still dead. Oh, boy. Yeah, there you go. We need good, honest people with guns. We need to get to it faster. And the only way is if the good guys, American people, have guns. But we're all going about it wrong. We want to take guns away from the good guys and think it's going to stop criminals, stop the mentally ill. It will not. 14-year-old girl shoots an intrusion suspect to save her sisters. It worked. That's good news. Gunman films himself walking into Walmart with an assault weapon and 100 rounds. An off-duty firefighter stops him. Store, I guess, clerk pulled alarm. I guess the guy asked, hey, what'll kill 200 people? I don't even understand a lot of that. I guess they stopped a crime in progress, I guess, huh? Mitch McConnell, assault weapons ban front and center in the Senate. Shame on you, Mitch. We have a right to keep and bear arms, and I'm telling you right now, disarming the good guys is not the answer. FBI seeks to scan social media for violent threats. Well, I understand. As long as it's public information, they should be able to do that. I pointed to a lot of solutions on Friday with Richard Mack and others about how we can solve a lot of these problems and not change the laws. We've already got plenty of red flags that you don't need red flag laws to double down on. It's called profiling, and it works very well. Gun sales surge fueled by first-timers, mostly for concealed pistols. Sheila Jackson Lee, whacked-out congresswoman, calls on Trump to stop these, quote, Gestapo-like ICE raids. Okay. Walmart worker asks thousands of Walmart employees to sick out over gun sales. Just pretend you're sick. Don't go in until Walmart stops selling guns. MSNBC had a guest on. I don't know how you say it, but it's Eli Mistel, however you say her name. I want pitchforks and torches outside Trump donors' house in the Hamptons. And there's a big push to literally attack all Trump supporters. I mean, it's out of control, folks. We talked about a warrant. A temporary employee at SunTrust Park, that's home of the Atlanta Braves, allegedly threatened to blow up the stadium, shoot everyone there. Wow. Just crazy. People are becoming unhinged, folks. ESPN pulls trailer for the movie where liberals hunt deplorables for sport. I don't know why you'd ever create a movie like that in the first place. I'm glad they pulled it, but why even create such an evil scenario? Universal to drop plans to release the movie of hunting humans. Well, they got it done. That's good news. Joaquin Castro, or however you say that. How is it, Kurt?
Joaquin,
yeah. Looks like Joaquin, you know, in America, anyway. Castro shares names and employers of Trump's donors in his San Antonio district. I don't know why you would do that. Again, that's putting people in harm's way unnecessarily. We don't need to ratchet up the problems. All right, then that was Friday's broadcast. Saturday's broadcast, we had a complete switch of gears, no politics. Can you imagine that on Liberty Roundtable Live? We had our guest on, a guy by the name of David Millark. And he's the co-founder of a group called Ancient Tree Archive. And they're archangels, if you will. He's also a co-founder of Champion Tree Project. You want to learn about this, it's arctrees.org, arctrees.org. And we talked about the archangel story. David Millark wants to stop global warming by climbing and cloning the world's largest trees. He's the man who planted trees, pay it forward to the year 4012 is what he talks about. And it's one man's mission to revive the last redwood forests, according to National Geographic. We had 2 hours with David, and we talked about the archangel mission, propagation, reforest, archive, and education. We talked about he has a newsletter on his website, arctrees.org. We talked about, quote, help expand our Champion Tree Project. Champion Trees are the answer, he says. The Archangel Store has interesting thing. You can clean our air, soil with Champion Trees. Your gift produces a positive change for our environment. And the Champion Tree Project, you can fund a grove of Champion Trees for $500,000. You can fund a Champion Tree Forest for $2,250,000. Anyway, a lot of people that are in the conservative movement are going to beat me up for this interview and say, Sam, how can you hang out with the tree huggers and double down? And, you know, let me just stop you there for a minute and say, we got to separate fact from fiction. Go listen to the interview before you beat me up. We don't maybe agree with David on everything. Who knows? All I know is this. He talks about how important the massive old forest trees are, these huge redwood and sequoia trees, for example, and how much CO2 they ingest and how much oxygen they put out. And he believes we can really make a serious dent in a lot of the climate change or the global warming or the by just planting millions and millions and millions and millions of trees. We don't need governments to control all of us. It's not a government discussion. It's a we created an imbalanced discussion when we've cut down so many trees in the world. And the answer is to plant a ton of trees, and he wants all of us to get involved. He wants to preserve the DNA of these trees. He wants to clone them and bring them back. A lot of them are almost extinct. And, you know, what? No matter what you feel about the environment, what about a natural idea to plant trees? Get the government out of it and plant a ton of trees. And he believes that whole ecosystems have been destroyed because we've taken down the trees. And a lot of the water that's inland, trees bring the water. Trees bring rain. Trees bring shade. Trees bring, not only will you change the balance back the way it used to be with oxygen and CO2 and everything else, but you'll bring the water inland. And so a lot of this is just displacement. You destroy the ecosystem around the trees and you got a CO2 oxygen imbalance and you don't have the water inland where we all the people need it. And it's a tragedy. And the answer he believes is to plant trees. And we don't need a gazillion regulations. What we need to do is have good, honest people getting involved in the solutions. And I think his arguments are fascinating. And I agree with the biblical command that we've been given the earth and we need to take care of it, right? Anyway, fascinating interview on Saturday. If you have time, check it out, libertyroundtable.com. That's a recap of Friday and Saturday's broadcast. Lowell Nelson with us in seconds. News the networks refuse to use on your radio. Straight ahead. Hard-hitting talk at your fingertips.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, without further ado, Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you for having me, gentlemen. Good to be with you.
All right, gun licensing talk at work. Now, that's you're not supposed to talk about that political stuff at work there, Lowell. Don't you know that?
Yeah, we have a Slack channel devoted to politics, and sometimes we get into hot topics on that channel. I try not to do it during working hours, but sometimes it happens, and sometimes we get into good conversations, and sometimes we just talk at each other without really accomplishing anything. So I generally don't engage that much, but last week was pretty interesting, and so I don't know. I thought
the reason it's so interesting, Lowell, is because it really starts to kind of in my opinion, document what the propaganda in America has been doing with the mainstream press that worked for so long day in and day out on the American people. They're not able to think straight about some of these things. Taking guns from the good guys is not the answer. Nevertheless, people get tempted into all kinds of, in my opinion, straw arguments about what's happening or flat out even false narratives and false discussions and false facts on these topics. And I think this is evident here.
Yeah, it is, and that's why I wanted to bring it up. And plus, I think we could learn something from each other as we, you know, sort of pick apart this conversation. But so I'm going to use a fake name. I don't have any permission from my coworkers to name them. But I'm just going to say Bob. Bob is the.
And this fictitious name really wraps up comments from multiple people, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. And okay. I'll use my name to represent those who are defending the right to own firearms. And so Bob writes this. He says, Australia reacted to a mass shooting by enacting the toughest gun laws in the world. As a result, the number of Australia's mass shootings dropped from 11 in the decade before 1996 to just one in the years since, the murder-suicide of a family of five in New South Wales in 2014. He then cited factcheck.org and an article from The Guardian that stated that tougher gun control in Australia did not lead to more murders, and that strict firearms laws reduces gun death. Well, that's very interesting. I mean, that's the type of information that you know gun control proponents lead out with. And so I responded with an article from fee.org explaining that Australia's gun laws the myth that Australia's gun laws reduced gun homicide. This article explains that that's a myth. It says that there is a decreasing number of gun deaths in Australia, but they fail to mention that gun deaths were already decreasing before gun control legislation and the gun buyback was instituted. In other words, gun control proponents claim that the buyback is responsible for the decrease in gun-related homicide, when in reality, the decrease was already occurring. Now, this is a common thing, Sam and Kurt, as you know, the vaccine advocates use this very same thing, where the incidence of diseases related to, like mumps and measles and so forth, that was way on the decrease long before vaccinations became, you know, strongly recommended or even mandatory here in the U.S., and yet the vaccine proponents will cite that statistic and say, look, we started vaccinating people, and look what happened to the rate of disease here in America, it went down. I mean, that's what they'll say. And so the same thing is happening here. And the rate of homicides, you know, sort of went up from the 60s to the 90s. It sort of peaked in the 90s and then began falling significantly all around the world, not just in Australia, not just in the United States. And yet the gun control advocates there in Australia say, look, we instituted these tough gun laws, and therefore gun violence went down. So that's one common fallacy in their argument when these gun control proponents talk about, you know, the sensible gun laws that they favor. So Bob then asked me, how do I explain the fewer gun deaths in OECD countries which have enacted tougher gun control laws? Well, now an OECD country is just any one of, I don't know, there's a couple dozen of these countries that supposedly are more advanced in their economic development. So the U.S. would be an OECD country. Most of the countries in Europe would be, et cetera. And I said that, look, if that is the case, which I really doubt, then overall violence probably increased, even though perhaps gun violence decreased, if it decreased at all. In other words, violence with baseball bats and knives went up. Right.
Yeah, and I think you're right about a lot of those statistics, but I also think, too, in gun-free zones or places where whenever they cannot admit to a gun being used and or not even report the crime at all, then they do. And what happens is they skew the statistics substantially when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. Well, in this question, Bob responded to me. He said it is exponentially harder to kill people, including yourself, with a knife or a bat than with a gun, right? I mean, he's saying that if you have a gun and you pull the trigger, that's far easier to kill yourself than if you don't have a gun and you try to kill yourself or others around you. And, you know, I think that makes sense. He asks, what, do you, So do you disagree? Or so which would we try first? Should we decrease violent acts, comma, or should we try to decrease death caused by violent acts? So in other words, he's comparing, you know, just plain old violence versus death caused by violent acts. And he says, sadly, too many gun control proponents in the U.S. don't put forth policies that will decrease either of the two significantly. In other words, they throw the baby out with the bathwater. Yeah, so it's kind of a hard, I don't know, contorted argument to follow, but I think what he's saying is that we really ought to, you know, take away all the guns from everybody, because the way that, you know, homicides happen is it's far harder to do, you know, a lot of damage with a baseball bat.
Yeah, and I would come back and say that's not really true. You go study the Bible or you study other scriptures and or historical events and things like that, and they had millions and millions and millions and millions killed with the sword or the machete or the javelin or the knife. I mean, I can go on and on and on, or even rocks. I mean, Cain killed Abel and there was no gun to make the point. So all I'm telling you is I don't even buy that necessarily. Now, you could say, well, it's faster with a gun, Sam, to take... Yeah, but you run out of bullets pretty quickly, too, unless you have just some war propaganda government or somebody else that can make massive weapons with plenty of ammunition. Hey, the gun goes quickly, right? And so all I'm trying to get at is I don't believe that the gun's just the latest way to kill faster, but it doesn't change the reality that wicked people kill. They always have and they always will.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. In fact, there's, I'm thinking of an African country which just in the last decade, they had no guns, and so there were two warring tribes, and basically they just went through and killed each other, but they did it with swords. Yeah, that's a good point. And so I wanted to elevate the discussion a little bit, because basically it was an arguing match about, you know, whether gun control works or doesn't. And so what I said next, I said, sure, we should address death caused by violent acts before addressing violent acts. And keeping government by far the biggest producer of death through violence, keeping governments at bay by means of an armed citizenry is therefore top priority. So I sort of went through and looked at all the governments in just in the last century, which killed millions of people of their unarmed citizens. And I said, this is a far bigger problem. You know, the government, our own government produced more death through gun violence than any set of criminals ever have. And so that's why it's top priority that we have an armed citizenry. And so then they said, well, look, yeah, I think you'd be hard-pressed to, Bob said, I think you'd be hard-pressed to show that the U.S. government would kill more of its own citizens if we adopted gun control measures for people who are clearly threats to themselves or other innocent people. In other words, there's this common belief shared by a lot of people, Sam, here in our own country, that the U.S. government would never think of killing its own citizens simply because, you know, we adopted a strict gun control here in the United States. And, you know, I just don't think they understand history, because, you know, governments throughout history, they always, you know, they register the guns first, and they confiscate the guns second, and then finally when they've disarmed the population, that's when they begin killing their own citizens. And I think it could happen here in the United States just like it's happened in other countries. I don't think we're immune from that at all. So I talked about Madeleine Albright, you know, for example, when she was asked about the deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children. You know, essentially she said, getting Saddam Hussein was worth the cost in life. Really? Yeah, I mean, that's you know, kind of unimaginable in my mind.
Well, it also suggests there's no other way to solve the problem without just putting a bunch of lives on the line. I don't agree with that. I think there's plenty of other ways. The Constitution and other Founding Father-esque viewpoints on this show there's many ways that you can take care of these problems without going to all-out war and putting our men and women in harm's way. There's plenty of ways. Quick pause. Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org. This is the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Yeah. USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
An autopsy on millionaire financier and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's body has been completed after he was found dead in his Manhattan jail cell on Saturday. New York City's medical examiner says she is withholding the findings, though, pending additional information. Richard Behar is a contributing editor of investigations for Forbes magazine.
He was supposed to have been watched at least every 30 minutes by guards who turned out to be terribly overworked and understaffed.
Epstein appears to have hung himself in his cell, but his death is the subject of a number of investigations, including one by the U.S. Justice Department. No word yet on the cause of a fire that tore through an Erie, Pennsylvania 24-hour-a-day daycare center, killing five children early Sunday morning. And this is USA Radio News.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who've agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-460-1663. That's 1-800-460-1663. Again, 1-800-460-1663.
A manhunt is over in Tennessee for an inmate accused of killing a prison administrator and escaping prison on a tractor. The Department of Corrections says Curtis Watson is back in custody after being seen early Sunday morning on surveillance in Henning, about an hour north of Memphis. He'd been serving time on aggravated kidnapping charges while he escaped the West Tennessee State Penitentiary in Henning while on work detail. 2020 presidential candidate Kamala Harris says the upcoming census is going to be heavily impacted by immigration raids.
This administration has directed DHS to conduct these raids as part of what I believe is this administration's campaign of terror.
On NBC's Meet the Press, the California senator said with the recent raids, like the one in Mississippi where 680 workers were arrested by Customs and Border Protection agents, illegal immigrants will be afraid to be counted in the census. She says that'll impact the results, which decides things like electoral lines and where the government puts its resources. For USA Radio News, I'm John DeMaster.
All right, we're talking to Lil Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, like we do always. Every Monday, incredible commentary, article, ladies and gentlemen, Wars and Domestic Massacres. Great article. Several shootings are talked about in the article. This is sad, but it's a drop in the bucket, ladies and gentlemen, compared to the real perpetrators of death, that is the U.S. military and militaries and governments around the world. All right? It's serious, Lowell.
It is, Sam. Thank you. Brown's University, they have a project called The Cost of War, and they released a new estimate of the total death toll from the U.S. war in three countries, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, just in the last 18 years, they estimate the number of people killed directly because of our violence was 244,000. That's the number that they came up with. 480,000 people directly killed by violence over the course of these three a conflict, more than 244,000 of them being civilians, right? So basically, we drop bombs on Iraq, we drop bombs in Afghanistan, Pakistan, we send troops over there, and they are involved in skirmishes and so forth, conflicts, and so they're estimating 480,000, that's half a million, nearly half a million people directly killed by violence, and about half of them are civilians. In addition to those killed by direct acts of violence, the number of indirect deaths, those resulting from disease, displacement, and the loss of critical infrastructure is believed to be several times higher, running into the millions. And so that's basically the results from the Brown University's Cost of War project. Now, that's just that's very low estimate. In fact, I was reading some other information where it's estimated that 6 million deaths have resulted. Well, of course, this second study I'm citing involved seven countries, and not just Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, but also included Libya and Somalia and Syria and I can't remember exactly, but, you know, seven different countries. They estimate 6 million deaths had resulted in the 18 years since 2001, since, you know, 9/11. And so Lou Rockwell, who posted this article, he sums this up. He says, if we want to end mass killing, then we should really stop glorifying the military. Deaths in war are downplayed, but when a mass shooting happens in America, in an American city, the media saturates us with propaganda calling for gun control. Interesting. So basically, he's talking about the hypocrisy of glorifying the military, which are resulting in the deaths of millions of people, millions of our brothers and sisters around the world, because that's what our military is doing right now. As you know, you talk about the tens of thousands in Venezuela, the hundreds of thousands in Yemen, the millions in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. And then we have a mass shooting in America where, you know, 9 people are killed, and I think 32 killed in Texas, 9 in Dayton, Ohio, or something like that. And all of a sudden, we just get inundated from the media about the need for gun control. It's just so terribly hypocritical. And then he says this is ironic, not only because of the enormous disparity between the numbers killed by the military and those killed in mass shootings. It's also ironic because many of the mass shooters are people the military has trained to become mass killers. In the aftermath of yet another mass shooting in the United States, the internet and the broadcast news alike are inundated with commentary about why this keeps happening in America.
What I find fascinating, too, is this. Whenever we have a quote, around the world, we say, these guys are the freedom fighters in a given country. The government is tyrannical. The government's evil. The government's abusing the people. So what we do is we say, let's arm the freedom fighters. And so we basically arm and train and fund the freedom fighters in a given scenario. So we're basically arming people around the world. Any side of the military we at the time, or any side of the country or the war at the time, we arm them. And say, we've got to. They're getting abused by the governments or by the faction or by the whatever tyrannical agent fills the vacuum of control. We got to arm them. And we do that all around the world. We've done it for literally decades, my whole life and longer. While we arm people around the world, we disarm the American citizen. My question is why? If a bad guy in a war, it needs a firearm to stop. I'm sorry, if a good guy needs a firearm to stop a bad guy in a war in a foreign country, when the thugs are going after us and killing people, don't the good guys need to stop that too? How does the disparity make any sense, Lol?
It makes no sense, Sam. It's not logical. But then we should not expect our politicians to be logical because they have an agenda. And it's not caring for the American people. It's not caring for American liberty. Their agenda is to stay in power. And when they can go to the military-industrial complex and get millions of dollars in campaign donations, campaign contributions, that, you know, simply if they will vote for something which is against the interests of our freedoms here in the United States.
So if arming the good guys around the world stops the bad guys, why not arm the people in the United States that are the good guys to stop the bad guys, right?
Exactly.
You can't have it both ways. But really, the author in the article, who's this, Lou Rockwell?
Yeah.
He basically says what we need is an end to American militarism and killing. And I think that's the spot on point to draw from this article, really. That's the, you know what, we don't need to be funding and promoting wars around the world.
Right. Absolutely right. Now, Joel Skousen weighs in on the mass shootings debate. He produces his World Affairs Brief every week. And I know a lot of our listeners subscribe to that World Affairs Brief, and if you're not one of them, then you should visit worldaffairsbrief.com and take a look at that, certainly for your consideration. But he brings great stuff to the table. I just want to quote both of his opening paragraphs to last Friday's brief. He says this: As long as American citizens are free to own and use a wide range of effective firearms, they will continue to be targets of government-directed or satanic-induced mass shooting. And that's because both the dark side of government and Satan want America disarmed so that they have no way to fight back against the coming globalist government and its total control agenda. Last week, he says, we saw both types of mass shooting. In addition to the mind-controlling shooter at Gilroy, California, Garlic Festival on the 28th of July, there is no solution to either type of mass violence since virtually all the perpetrators are mentally and emotionally unstable and products of a purposeful moral corruption directed by virtually all social and entertainment media today. Those that are weak and unstable then become subjected to either deep state manipulation or Satan's direct influence on the mind, which is just as real, to become the patsies in these black operations driving America toward giving up the key part of this bulwark against all forms of tyranny. A lot of the blame, of course, must go to parents and schools which fail to actively shield children or fight against the pernicious social influences that continually ply youth with banal social conversation, mindless movies, or violent video games featuring conflict, sex, and morally corrupting influences. Instead, the media celebrates this as diversity and freedom from religious constraint. Only parents can intervene in the skewed development process affecting their children, but almost none do so, refusing to accept any alternative to public schooling and having been long ago subjected to these same influences themselves, which they shrug off. They often fail to see the danger until a child goes irretrievably into the oblivion of evil thoughts and actions. End of quote. So I think Joel's point is a good one. That is really that America is the strongest bastion of liberty left in the world today because the citizens are armed. We're armed here in the U.S. And therefore we are the target of this endless stream of mass shooting incidents in order to dissuade us from the constitutional answer, which is to an armed citizenry. And for tyranny to truly rule the globe again, America has to be disarmed. That's the end game. So we will continue to see these mass shootings here in our country over and over again until they can beat down the, you know, those of us who hold the Constitution up, because they want Americans to acquiesce to this so-called greater good and then give up their guns for safety, because in the end we'll get neither, of course, neither guns nor safety. So I think that's the end game. I think Joel brings up a good point. And we have to stiffen our opposition to these schemes. We have to steel ourselves against this gun control propaganda. These gun controls must never, Sam, receive our approval. Else we are going to end up on a junk heap of history like so many other countries who gave up their arms for promised security. Sam?
This is critical to understand. Joel's making some really valid points, talking about the First, the Second, and the Fourth Amendments violated. Obviously, your Second Amendment violated because it shall not be infringed. But the First Amendment's often violated because the alleged crime or red flag is not an actual crime at all. Rather, it's free speech and or expression. The Fourth Amendment, folks, is violated because, hey, it's judge, jury, and executioner all in one. We better stand for the sacred cause of liberty, folks. Lowell Nelson in seconds.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there? And that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. Whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S. 205-672-2000. 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, serious business with Lowell Nelson talking about our right to keep and bear arms. Red flag laws violate all kinds of amendments, first, second, and fourth to get started. All right, we need to be very serious, but you know what they've done, folks? Mental health and psychiatry are being weaponized, folks. That's a big, big deal. Red flag laws are a slippery slope to more tyranny, Lowell.
That's right, Sam. Boy, where do I start? I mean, it's a target-rich environment all around us. You know, Maryland was one of the first states to pass this red flag law, and it's probably the most memorable example. There, Gary Willis was shot fatally by police who were there to confiscate his weapons. Gary Willis was just an older gentleman who one family member happened to think that he was kind of crazy, and she called the police on him. The police went there to confiscate his weapons. He answered the door at like 5 in the morning or something. And, you know, at first he put his gun down, and then when they tried to execute this order, in other words, without a warrant, so they were violating the Fourth Amendment, trying to enter his home and take his weapons without a warrant, and he resisted, and they shot him. So, you know, that's one example. There's another example of a prankster in California who called the 911 operator in Wichita, claiming that he was being held hostage at a Wichita home, and he gave and that a murder had already occurred there. The prankster thought the address he gave was that of an online gamer with whom he had an ongoing feud, but that person had tricked him into giving police the address of some non-related person, Andrew Finch, who was not involved in the feud and was at home minding his own business. Well, in this case, the Wichita SWAT team responded, and when Andrew Finch stepped out of his front door to see what all the commotion was about, the officers, thinking he was the murderer and hostage taker and that he was reaching for a weapon, they shot him fatally dead. They killed him, right? And so here's two examples of these red flag laws. Basically, when you violate the Fourth Amendment, when you don't get a warrant from an impartial third party based on probable cause, then you are asking for trouble, and that's exactly what red flag laws do. They bypass the constitutional protections that we have as citizens, and they give the police authority, unconstitutional authority, by the way. It's not lawful authority. They legalize it, but it's not lawful. And, you know, they give them the authority to just knock the door down and take you away or confiscate your guns or whatever. So this is how the mental health and psychiatry are being weaponized. And to the allegation or to the fact, I guess, that red flag laws are a slippery slope to more tyranny, it really is important to note, Sam, that once power is given to government, you almost never, ever get it back.
You're right about that. And oftentimes it takes a civil war. It takes a war to get it back. Sometimes only blood will bring freedom back, which is a sad tale to tell. I want to highlight this mentally ill issue, though, and ask fundamental questions surrounding this, because this is the hole they want to drive a truck through. because it's really hard to argue with unless you can get grasp fundamental elements of the argument first. Because what they say is, well, who in their right mind would want mentally ill people to get guns and kill? Well, nobody in their right mind, but that's the false starter. Once they drive you through that chute, if you will, put you through that gate, there's no way to debate and win because you've already agreed that they're right, kind of a thing. What you've got to do is step back and say this. Let me ask you this, a couple of fundamental questions. Are there more mentally ill people today than there was of yesteryear when there wasn't so many shootings? Yes or no?
Yes.
If there are, then you got to ask the question, why? And I would submit to you that it's the violent nature of our society. We glorify the military. We have violent video games going postal and Grand Theft Auto and violence in video games is glorified everywhere. We've got gangs in the streets. We've got criminals that are on the take. There's no tie to God. Okay, so that's the reason why. If there are more mentally ill people, the next question is, do mentally ill people by nature go violent? And I would say no. They might have misconceived notions about things. They might have things out of perspective. But very rarely in history have mentally ill people been violent. I'm not saying there's not an occasion, but rarely is it violent. What makes all these mentally ill people violent? In other words, why the second you say somebody's mentally ill, that violence is the first thing on our minds? And it's because we've raised a culture, a society, an atmosphere of violence, and we've taken away any support mechanisms that people could use. If somebody's mentally ill, usually in the old days, they were surrounded by a big family that would love them, that would be kind to them, that would nurse them through these things with love and patience and talk them off the ledge of the sadness and the despair and the discouragement and the anger and the misunderstanding of reality and things like that. Nowadays, people don't have that environment. Families are tiny. They're small. People are driven into gangs and people are driven into drugs and alcohol and all these things to cope with this. And so we've changed the whole game. They don't have a tie to God. They don't have a strong father and a mother to raise them. They don't have the religious teachings that let people realize that violence is not a great avenue to go down. So every mentally ill patient now is considered a violent potential. And that's not the way that we used to even look at it or be. So we've got increased mental illness, and we've got an increased link to it's always a violent threat. If it's not now, it soon will be. Why? Because of drugs in our society, because they don't have this support group. We need to have those open discussions, Lowell.
Well, you raise a good point. I agree with you there. So let's get back to the Second Amendment, because I wanted to ask you about this, too. When the founders wrote into the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights there that a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state and so forth. When they said a well-regulated militia, I want to unpack that just a little bit. Now militia referred to any able-bodied male
between 15 and 45, sure.
Yeah, 15 and 45, right? And so, but what did they mean by well-regulated? Those words.
Well, let's talk about a couple of things. There's two main fundamental differences in America versus any other country in the world that preceded it that we know of. One fundamental idea is we look to God, not government, for solutions as our creator and as the author of liberty. So we're accountable to God, our creator, not accountable to some government. And we look at God as the author of our liberty, not government as the grantor of rights. That's one massive difference. The second massive difference was this idea that we, the people, have a God-given unalienable right of self-defense. And so instead of the government having the arms and the army and the regulation, the people do. So, yes, there was a tie to legitimate local forms of government. So there wasn't anarchy. There was order. But it was all about saying we don't need a standing army. We don't need the government with the power. The people could do that part themselves just fine. So well-regulated, in my mind, meant that they have practiced and organized themselves in ways that are orderly and appropriate. It has a tie to the legitimate, proper role of limited government for the preservation of our rights, so there's not disorder in the system. But it was we, the people, defending our families, our wives, our children, and we were to be assembled as needed and always at the ready in an effort to say we don't need a government standing army. We don't need a government armed to the teeth. That doesn't go well because it 9 times out of 10 turns against the people. What we need is the people in charge of this aspect. That's where the checks and balances come in. Lowell?
Yeah, so we have people who say we need sensible ways to restrict some people from getting from guns, right? I mean, and I think in the beginning it was true that if you had somebody who was certifiably an idiot or insane, or, you know, because of some disease or something, no one allowed them to have guns. And so, but it was the local community that did that. It wasn't some top-down national law, right? It was the local community, and basically it was family in the beginning. A family decided whether everybody could use weapons. If you had a brother or a sibling or something with a maybe an insane problem or something, then they just never got to have firearms. So how do you implement that type of a situation today in today's society? You know, where people are calling for sensible, you know, gun control. You know, I just kind of, I'm just wondering what the solution is.
Well, first off, you got to reject the lie of sensible gun control. There's no such thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and
thing as sensible gun control. Mm-hmm. Bad guys will get guns. They always have and they always will. And if they don't get a gun, they'll use something else. Just ask Kane.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the first lie. And the second you say, well, yes, of course, sensible gun control is legitimate, then you just debate how much, Lo. That's all.
Yeah, so that's the slippery slope.
You debate how much and by who, right?
Yeah, but isn't it the case that, that you know, insane asylum people didn't have guns in the very beginning? I mean...
Well, yeah, families would prevent it. It's the same thing with a kid, though. I mean, the idea is, hey, how do you stop a kid from having a gun? Well, you know what? So there is a balance there, but the question is who should take that responsibility? And I submit to you, when the family melts down and the community, no churches are around, no moral leadership, pastors or whatever you say, when that all societal, those two societal things, the family and the church, break down, there are no good answers, and government will fill that vacuum. The problem is they don't have a legitimate agenda. They have a sinister agenda, and they're using this weaponization of mental illness and the weaponization of psychiatry to push their agenda, which is really to disarm all the good guys, because then they gain control. This isn't about gun control. This is about control.
Yeah, absolutely right, Sam. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And we just have to stand against the red flag laws that there's going to be a ton of that type of legislation coming down the pike in a legislature near you, near your home, and we have to oppose it. We have to stop it, because if we ever give up our guns here, then we're going to lose liberty here, and thereby everyone else in the world is going to be adversely affected, because this is the last bastion of liberty. And it is.
You're right. Joel Skousen says this succinctly. America is the strongest bastion of liberty left in the world today. Why? Because its citizenry are armed. For tyranny to truly rule the globe again, America must be disarmed. Okay, that's where we are. That's where we're headed, because that's what they want, Lol.
Yeah, in fact, I think I wrote this in my conversation somewhere. I said I was basically saying that the U.S. administration has no compunction at all about killing youth, right? I said my point is that the U.S. regime is heartless. It has no moral compass. It doesn't care for you or your family. It only respects you because you have the power to defend yourself and your family. And this power is in the guns, knives, and intelligence that you possess. So, yes, we need to halt criminal gun violence domestically, but we must do so with local solutions. And self-government is the best government. I go on and on there, but we have to maintain an armed citizenry, Sam, and stop red flag gun control legislation.
Well, and if you look at my Friday's broadcast, we documented a ton of things that could be done to set up a profile to watch for a lot of these criminals and bad guys, and we don't even need any red flag new laws on the books to do it. We've got our own flags we can watch for, and we need to be doubling down on that. At the same time, we need to promote family and churches as the way to surround these people that are mentally ill with love and make sure that it doesn't go violent. That's a personal responsibility of ministering that we all need to be involved in. Lowell, thank you so much, sir. Godspeed.
You're welcome, Sam.
Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, doing a phenomenal job. We declare this nation shall endure.